me tell you about a product that I am using personally, and I really think this works. You know, beetroot juice has been used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, and studies show that it can increase athletic performance and stamina by 16%. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com and you can get a 30-day supply free of this great product. It comes with your first order and it's backed by a money-back guarantee. 800-738-2198. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we join Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin for a discussion of your important questions and medical dilemmas. And we have a medical, actually we have a nutritional dilemma to solve for our next questioner, correct?
Yes. Aaron from Indiana writes us, "Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I used to eat myself into a sugar coma most days of the week, so it came as a pleasant surprise when I didn't experience any withdrawal symptoms from significantly decreasing my total carb intake. This may have been helped by increasing my dietary fat intake. However, over the past 3 to 4 months, I have intense cravings for and indulge in massive amounts, 3 cups or more, of foods like nuts and seeds, and cheese.
Right.
What might account for this? What can I do?"
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
Aaron, guess
what? You're the nutritionist. That's why you get the big bucks, Layla. So
yeah.
Explain this phenomena to us.
And we hear this a lot, especially when it concerns nuts, seeds, and cheese.
Yeah.
Nuts and seeds are often a trigger food for a whole lot of people. First of all, it's an easy go-to snack. But that motion of dipping your hand into the canister and up in your mouth, you know, the way we used to do with chips and pretzels and so forth, it's kind of taken that place. So if it's a trigger food for you, it's the best idea is to actually stop eating it for a few weeks. The other thing to do is make sure that you're eating enough foods during your meals, your protein and fat during your meals, so these cravings can subside. Now, the thing about casein actually hits our opioid circuitry. That feel good stuff when we're craving, you know, the ice cream, the mashed potatoes, the cookies, the cake.
Yeah.
Cheese fills in that slot for us now because we're no longer having the cake and the ice cream and so forth. So cheese is still doing this to our brains to some degree. And again, it may be best to either limit or even eliminate your use of that food if it's triggering more craving in you.
That's a very good idea. Yeah, that's a very good answer. I wouldn't have thought about that, but
But the best thing, I think a lot of people who are on low-carb diets, because they find that they're not truly hungry for the next meal, they will often skip it or just rely on a handful of nuts. Well, guess what? You probably were hungry, Aaron, and what you really need to do is make sure you have regular meal times. And you, in particular, may benefit from having 4, 5, or 6 smaller meals a day that have no nuts.
In other words, preempt the cravings.
Preempt the craving.
Eat preventively.
You know, Dr. Hoffman, I often tell our patients, if I let 7 hours go by between lunch and dinner, all bets are off.
Yeah.
Now I'm craving pizza.
Yeah.
Try to talk anybody out of that craving.
Yeah. It's like when you get so...
Now it's a low blood sugar craving.
When you get monster hungry, you just lose all discretion in terms...
control.
Yeah.
So it's a strategy for everybody.
Well, this is also what we recommend. You know, like Christmas time, we see when people say, oh, you know, the parties and I gain weight and what do I do? I say, you know, it's like... Before you go shopping, eat a little something, because otherwise you just go up and down the aisles picking up all kinds of junk. And similarly, you know, you go to a Christmas party, which is sort of an ad lib smorgasbord experiment, you know, where you have everything in front of you. You know, they actually do lab experiments with that, you know, and it's like an all-you-can-eat chow down. Is eat preventively. You know, have a little snack before. You know, have some, you know, peanut butter on a rice cake or something like that, or, you know, have some... you know, carrot sticks or something like that. Fill yourself up with just a little bit. I mean, obviously, you want to indulge a little bit. You don't want to just stand there and just with your hands in your pocket. But
you don't want to show up. You don't want to show up to a function like that hungry.
Right. Well,
you
which
want
is
your hunger blunted before you go.
Which is the opposite of what some people do. Because I was once invited to a game at Yankee Stadium by a guy in the vitamin industry who had he has like mm-hmm. primo seats, like right on the first baseline, right in front. And part of it is wow. You don't just go to the game, you go to Legends. And so he said to me, you know, come hungry, bring your appetite. I said, why? He says, you'll see. I said, so I didn't eat lunch. And I showed up there ravenous. And there's like this giganda room there with all manner of incredible, there's like a sushi table, there's a lobster table, there's a roast beef table, there's like a salad wow. bar, there's like giant mounds of paste. No, well, there's not such good food there. Giant mounds of pastry, pastries, cookies, you know, Mexican food, you know, Chinese food, you know, and you can eat yourself silly there. But, you know, the if you're concerned about, but you can't go, I mean, so fortunately, I don't go there very often. I'm not invited. So, you know, I think, you know, this is actually a subject we're going to tackle because we can announce it now. We're going to be doing a webinar. We actually have done webinars in the past. Excuse me, we've done seminars in the past. And people have said, great, you know, but it's such a hassle to travel into New York. And, you know, we would get, you know, 40, 50, 60 people showing up. And then a lot of people said, yeah, but I couldn't make it. Could you, did you tape it or do you have a video of it? And we would say, no, you have to show up. And so now what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing webinars. And we'll do a, so we'll do a public lecture. People can show up and it's fun. But you'll also be able to dial in live and listen online and see, because we'll also do a video, but also it'll be archived, so you'll be able to see the webinars. I mean, there will be a small fee, but it's reasonable, and it'll be the next one that we're going to be doing is precisely on this subject, is the food cravings and how to alleviate food cravings. And you've already provided us with some very interesting insights on you know, food physiology. We're going to go into depth about the science of food cravings and how to, you know, you got to strategize, because we, as human beings, we are lean, mean eating machines. And that's fine if you live on a Serengeti plain, you know, 500,000 BC. But if you live in, you know, major metropolitan area and you've got markets and gourmet stores and restaurants surrounding you and takeout places, you know, they always shove those things under your door, and you just, you don't even have to get off the couch. You can, with just the your iPhone in your hand, you can order up, you know, all kinds
of.
You know, so we've got something we have to interpose, some strategies between us and all that hazardous food environment that's out there that tempts us all the time.
Enter the concept of defensive eating.
Thank you. Beautiful.
Which we will introduce to you at the webinar.
Okay, let's not steal our own thunder, because we've got lots more to say on that subject. What else is on our question roster?
But I thank Erin for her question, because it's a terrific one.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see that coming. That's an interesting one. Is that, you know? But I've had that happen to me too. It's like, okay, stop eating sugar.
More nuts.
Yeah.
More nuts. Where are the nuts? Yeah. Stop eating sugar, and then exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Okay, I've got a couple of questions here concerning probiotics. One is from Francine, and another from Gary. Dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman, could you address how do you go about selecting a probiotic? There are so many of them out there, ranging from a billion cultures, you know, to so many. Should it be lactobacillus? Should it be bifidobacterium? This is all so complicated. And what do you think of a product like Prescript Assist, which has 29 probiotic strains? How are we supposed to choose a probiotic when there are so many on the market?
Well, the answer, and this is, and I also address this sometimes in scientific lectures to professional colleagues, is the science of understanding our microbiome and its relationship to health is in its infancy. And we're only beginning to develop an understanding of which probiotics help which conditions. And there's so many benefits to probiotics. You know, some help irritable bowel syndrome. Some are directed specifically towards ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. Some support our immune system. Some may even help our metabolism. Some may help our mood. Some may help women avoid vaginal yeast infections. Some may help people avoid urinary tract infections. And on and on and on it goes. And so, And, you know, some may help to alleviate anxiety, as we talked about in part one, with mood effects. And what's interesting is that it may be different strokes for different folks, depending on the flora that you have present. And we know that there's a vast, there's a great deal of variation in the flora that people have. And some of it's based on diet, some of it's based on heredity, and some of it's based on whether you've taken a lot of antibiotics, and whatever medical conditions or stresses you're under. And we see this a lot in our practice, don't we, Layla? So we give a probiotic to a person, and we think it's going to help them, and they say, no, I don't do well with that. And then we switch, and it's, oh, this one really helps. So it's still...
And we'll see the opposite in the next patient, yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So it's still a little bit like trial and error. And I don't feel, you know, I wish we had more precision about that, but I got to say, it's the same thing in mainstream medicine. It's like somebody has high blood pressure. You try this, you try that, you try the other thing. I mean, there's some plausibilities. Same thing with psychiatry. It's like, oh, wow, you know, Prozac. No, that didn't work. I'll try this, you know, that, and the other. It's still a little bit of an empirical science. And, you know, this thing about the billions of organisms, one of the, you know, I did a recent interview with Ross Pelton, who is a brand spokesperson for Dr. Ahira's Probiotic, which is one of our sponsors. And by the way, they're introducing a great new probiotic which generates glutathione in the gut. That's very exciting. They're rolling it out this week at the Expo West in California. I wish I was there, but I had other things to do. I'm going to Washington this week to an A&H meeting, the Alliance for Natural Health. And I'll be talking to legislators in Washington. I'm going to make my rounds of Capitol Hill. If you see some headlines, you know, I'm being led out of the Capitol building with handcuffs, you'll know that I lost my temper. You know, hopefully not. I'll try to keep it low-key. But anyway, so this new product is designed to be a probiotic that generates glutathione in the gastrointestinal tract. That sounds fantastic because a lot of people don't absorb glutathione. It's actually a great addition to the Dr. Ahira's probiotic. Dr. Ahira's doesn't maintain counts. Because the thought is that quantity is not necessarily quality. It's all a matter of what takes. So the analogy is, you know, you can seed ground with lots of seeds. That doesn't necessarily mean you'll have a good crop. You might need prebiotics to help your probiotics work better. Dr. Ahira's is a combination of probiotics and prebiotics. And it's also multiple species. Some people think, well, keep it simple, use one species at a time. That's very precise and targeted. And other people think, well, you know, use multiple species because the multiple...
You get more synergy.
Right.
Possibly.
What's the name of our questioner here?
Both Francine and Gary.
So did I confuse Francine and Gary completely? Because I got to admit...
No, not at all. They had similar questions about how to choose a probiotic.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is that I have to say there's no definitive answer yet.
Right.
You know, I wish I could say, well, take Dr. Hoffman's special probiotic. It's the best, you know, in the world for everyone. And we have not arrived at that level yet, but it looks stay tuned because this is going to be a very exciting decade for probiotic research. And I think by 2020 or so, we'll really have it nailed down. And there are going to be some really exciting products on the market. It's just, and we're just in the infancy of understanding, you know, which probiotic works best for which person. And then perhaps we'll be able to do a stool test and then say, hey, here's the probiotic for you. This is based on the results of a stool test. That's where it's headed, I think.
Not just personalized medicine, but for your personalized microbiome.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Customize your microbiome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting. Okay. We've got a question from Frank.
Yep.
I'm sure you've discussed this before. For those of us with autoimmune issues, which immune-enhancing supplements should be avoided and which are okay? For instance, he mentions vitamin C okay, astragalus okay, AHCC, elderberry.
I just entered in on that controversy with a couple of herbalists from Cedar Bear Natural. Joanne and James Robertson, I think, who we did a podcast with a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. And they were talking about echinacea. Now, we know that echinacea is an immune enhancer. We know that it activates natural killer cells. And that's been demonstrated. It's probably one of the best studied herbs around because it really is an immune enhancer. And I asked them a question, well, what if you have an autoimmune disease? And there's been controversy about that. And they say, oh, no, if you have an autoimmune disease, you definitely shouldn't take this because it can enhance your immune system and that you want to actually moderate your immune response when you take echinacea. Now, I pose the same question to other people who are experts on herbal medicine about echinacea, and they say, oh, no, you can take echinacea every day, even if you have an autoimmune disease. So I have to say, this question has not been fully resolved, but I would probably err on the side of caution. Wow. But, you know, there are things that vitamin D is an example of something that's both an immune enhancer and an immune dampener because it's been shown to be helpful in terms of reducing the risk of infections, no question. It really reduces the incidence of many infections. It seems to be effective against tuberculosis, bacterial infections, and viruses. But it also is very effective against autoimmunity. So there you have a duality of effects. It seems to be... we refer to things that help you when things are too high and too low as adaptogens. They help get you into an optimal response and temper your response if it's excessive and bring it up if it's inadequate. Mm-hmm. So, is vitamin C going to worsen an autoimmune disease? No. Is vitamin D going to worsen? No. It's actually helpful.
HCC
is an example of something that may be helpful in certain autoimmune diseases.
These are the ones mentioned by Frank.
Yeah. I think more specific study needs to be done. I would be cautious about immune boosters like HCC, astragalus, and echinacea in an autoimmune disease.
Elderberry?
That's
for flu.
Yeah,
right?
Elderberry is probably not going to exacerbate an autoimmune disease. It's actually, when I asked the Robinsons about elderberry, they said that's actually something you can take throughout the flu season. It's not going to be harmful. Echinacea, they said, just target it to an infection. If you have an infection, take it at that time.
Wow. Yep.
Okay, we have time for one quick question.
I've got a quick question.
By the way, these questions are so excellent that we don't have answers to some of the questions.
I
have to be honest, and you know, this I may sound wishy-washy by saying, well, on the one hand this and one hand that, but I've got to be honest and rigorous about this. There are some questions which have not been adequately resolved, and there are some people who are very vociferous on one side or another of a question. And I think you should be suspicious sometimes of people who know all the answers and they always come down hard on one side of a controversy or another.
Yeah, I agree.
There are some issues that remain not completely explored. So we need to do some more research on some of these things.
Yeah. Thank you, Frank, for your question. We've got a quick one here from Anne. I began taking strontium 5 years ago after listening to your program. I'm almost 85. I recently had a bone density, and my numbers went up significantly. My doctor was amazed at the results.
Yay.
Can I continue to take strontium? Is there a cutoff for this supplement?
Right.
She started taking it about 5 years ago.
Okay. Well, you know, we now know that for the medications, there's a point of diminishing returns. For medications like Actonil, Boniva, and Reclast, well, Reclast is an intravenous one, Fosamax, that there's a point at which the efficacy starts to wane and you start to run the risk of getting more fragile bones. That has not been found with strontium. Strontium has a different mode of action. But since strontium is a powerful, concentrated nutrient, what I generally do is I give my patients strontium for as long as it takes to bring their numbers up to a satisfactory level, and then I say, take it easy on strontium, and then we can test them a few years later and see if they're again losing significant bone. I've had to have put some patients back on strontium. Are there any serious long-term consequences to strontium? Does it create defective bone like these medications? The answer is, so far, that's not doesn't appear to be the case. It's just that I would err on the side of caution. Now, vitamin D, can you take that forever? Yes, because the amount of vitamin D that you're taking, even if you take high doses, would be the amount that's equivalent to what your body would make if you lived in the sun. You know, if you lived in an equatorial region and you got sun exposure in your skin. So if you take 5,000, you know, a lifeguard gets, you know, can get up to 20,000 from a day on the beach. So that vitamin D is in the physiological realm. When we give 680 milligrams of strontium, there's no dietary food that provides that much strontium. We're artificially boosting strontium and using it as a targeted nutrient to build bone. And so I'm erring on the side of caution. I'm saying, okay, great, we built bone. Let's not, you know, we don't need to give you like super bone, you know, five times normal strength, because that's overkill. You know, we're not going to want to do that necessarily. You know, turn you into the Iron Man, you know, like in the DC comics, you know, where we can drop you from, you know, three stories and your bones won't break.
Yeah, not fun. To be dropped from three stories.
That's the ultimate test. I mean, you know, because that's how we know that those things are working. So I'm looking for our previous podcast with, let's see, the one on echinacea. I want to give people a right reference to that one. And I'm going to our index here. We now have a convenient index, which is a landing page. Yeah, I did see pretty good memory. Pretty good memory. It is Joanne and Carl Robinson. Joan, actually. It's a weird spelling. J-H-O-A-N-E and Carl Robinson. They're co-founders of Cedar Bear and Naturels. And it's a great podcast. We did it February 12th this year. And if you scroll back on our podcast page, you can hear what they have to say about why echinacea should not be used for certain conditions. And not simply for prevention. You use it, in their opinion, when you get sick. Elderberry, au contraire, you can use it throughout the winter season to fend off infections. So, you know, there are things that stimulate the immune system which can be tolerated long-term and preventively, and others they think should be used selectively and for short periods of time. That's their, you know, their view of the science.
Terrific.
So that's the deal.
Thank everybody for their questions. These are great questions.
Great questions. And could you make them a little simpler next time? So just give a definitive yes or no answer.
That's it. Not much to talk about then. Okay.
Exactly. All right. So thanks. Keep the questions coming. Radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll take more questions next week. Thank you very much for joining us, Layla. And I'll see you, in the office tomorrow.
Very good.
If there's not an ice storm.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Take care.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.